Pamela Williamson, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI in Naptown. Know what I'm saying? Keep listening. You might learn something.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Film lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Hope you have a relaxing Memorial Day weekend, no matter what you're doing, where you're doing it. But and since it is a long holiday, by the way, at the time we're recording this, there's a mass exodus of the building. I'm sure it's just like for some people at work on a Friday. But we have a guest, and it's a guest who's been here so long, he has his own intro, and it's been expanded. And it's not on. So let's try again.
The blackest brother in the galaxy, Nubian God.
What's a Nubian?
Will someone shut that man up?
Never! Never!
I do hateful things for which people love me, and I do lovable things for which they hate me. I'm admired for my detestability.
It is a newspaper's duty to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
I don't like that fellow.
That's right, Abdul-Kim Shabazz is in studio.
What him say?
Him say pledge dollars at work.
Wow. But actually, you know what? It's funny. I was listening to, speaking of WFYI, I think it was when Howard Stern was on
Fresh Air,
and he would talk about how his dad, who was a recording engineer, would do the recordings for the cartoon people like Dawes Butler. And,
oh, really? That whole era? Yeah,
that whole era. And he would sit there and just watch those guys just do all the voices and all the work and do Don Adams' Tennessee Tuxedo.
That's right.
And the whole nine yards.
And the thing was, you could hear the entire conversation because it wasn't interrupted by Robin laughing every 5 minutes. So,
but actually, it was interrupted by them laughing.
Well, that's good
because
that's
they would just die laughing when they were just watching each other do the stuff back and forth.
Did Terry Gross bring up Fart Man?
Actually, yes, she did.
See, there you go. See,
it was an interview that actually she said it went so well that the normal hour that they used,
they did a two-parter.
They did a two-parter.
I saw Stern on Letterman's thing on Netflix, and I'm still not a big fan of his work, and I know he's done a bigger impact for radio, I think, more than I think I like the content itself. But yeah, even he has mellowed out in his own old age, unlike you, who've not mellowed out in your old age. So happy birthday to you, Mr. Shabazz.
Thank you, my friend. Abdul 5.0, as we like to call
it. Are you doing that now?
Yeah, yes, we are. Hey, wait till we get to 10.0.
Okay. Yeah, you'll say to death, you'll walk over, but you limp back.
You'll limp back. And by the way, King to Queen's level 3.
Abdul-Kim Shabazz of IndiePolitics.org and other nefarious chicanery things of not embracing his roots and
lawyering and political broadcasting and other fun stuff.
Poking the hornet's nest and
on social media.
Or actually around this area, the wasp
nest.
Yes.
Wasps have no stings, which is what makes it even more interesting.
And it doesn't have Stuart Copeland either. See, ladies and gentlemen, we've been doing this for a long time. And actually, looking back, and oh, by the way, where else but Abdul-Kim Shabazz and public radio goodness can you hear audio from Chasing Amy, 1776, two versions of Inherit the Wind and Go, Go, Gophers.
Only on public radio.
That's a 15-year friendship right here, my friend.
That's right. This ain't no diamond. This is real public radio.
Wow. Hello to the people down at U of I.
Where I came so I can say that. So you
okay, fair enough. So, yeah, you just turned 50, and earlier this month was my 20th anniversary here at the station. And it's as if no time has passed at all. I remember the first time when you were back at 1430, and I was on my third morning show at 1430 doing film reviews. And I knew there was a new guy and just kind of creeped open the door and...
Sat in. Like, I know you.
A couple weeks, we just kind of sized each other up a little bit verbally, and we had a mutual admiration over Monty Python and Richard Pryor. And
one of us said something, then I was like,
okay,
he's good.
Might
have been a Richard Pryor reference.
Could have been a Richard Pryor or an art house or something,
yeah.
But...
some movie about death and chess and
you love death and chess
and a school bus and people on it. And
see, he makes fun of those. He really because he's gonna watch the Seventh Seal more than he is Madea's final reunion funeral. He'll watch Seventh Seal more than and also you know what happened that doesn't happen in the art house movies. People talk on their phone. Nobody's ring. Yeah, yeah. He's playing chess with death. Yeah, it's all right. That doesn't happen. Nobody brings their crying child to the Seventh Seal screenings.
Yeah, you never hear, oh, look, thou dost droppeth a knife. What will thou do now?
Are we doing the greatest hits now? Just yeah. This is our live show. We're opening for the Smothers Brothers sometimes.
Mom always liked you best.
We Abdul and I, of course, also sell, and you can be on the ground floor, the GoFundMe for the Art House Drive-In.
Wow.
You get Chardonnay. Always have a nice at cold temperature.
Do drive-ins still exist?
Yes, we have a couple of them that we're going to talk about on the show this week. So when was the last time you were at a drive-in, and have you taken the lovely Mrs. Shabazz?
The lovely Mrs. Shabazz and I have never been to a drive-in.
You
need
to fix
that. I think
the
last drive-in I went to was like 80.
It's about the same here.
Southwest side of Chicago near.
Was it fenced in?
Actually, yes.
Was it like Thunderdome?
It was fenced in because it was a drive-in during the week or night, but a flea market
swap
on the weekend.
Yes, flea market. Oh, yeah.
Because my uncle, who used to really carbonate ourselves here, had a typewriter and sewing machine repair shop. And so we would go to the flea markets on Sunday, and he would...
What part of town was this?
Southwest side, kind of like near not too far from like 79th and Cicero in that...
For those who didn't want to go to Maxwell Street.
Yeah, for those who didn't want to go to Maxwell Street or Midway, kind of in that neck of the woods. All I remember was there used to be a Zaire. Yeah.
Yes.
Nearby.
Yep.
When I was a little kid. So.
Now, had you done the go to the drive-in that night and then have to go to the flea market in the morning?
I was just like 12, 13 years old, never had.
No, you didn't bounce back.
Yeah. Okay. But I do hear now with drive-ins, it's not wireless. You can stream over your... Bluetooth speakers.
Oh, you mean you can't have the giant
you can't
thing
have that
could
giant
crack your window?
Crack your window thing.
And don't fog the windows, folks.
Yeah.
A gentleman with a giant flashlight may come a knocking.
Yeah, no, there was none of that.
All right. Well, there you go. So, but yeah, this is so, because you're turning 50. I turn 50 later this year. And the perception of age... Because if you think about when we were kids, now I don't know how it was in your house. We're doing this routine. My house was like this, and your house was, but I remember my family threw massive 40th birthday parties in the neighborhood. Anybody who had a neighbor, and a lot of black balloons and the fake foam tombstones and the lordy lordy Donna's 40 kind of stuff, and it seems so absurd now by that rationale it's like you're only turning 40, you're not Mudbone. That rationale, was Mudbone really actually 50 in real life?
Well, I guess back then if you were lucky to make it to 40 and not get eaten by a bear, everybody was excited.
I guess.
I mean, in ours, no, not really. I mean,
no.
I tell people the eye opener for me was I am now the same age as my dad when I graduated from high school and my mom when I graduated from college.
Okay.
So that's just more. That was more the wow moment. I didn't feel like okay, I'm dying here or
nope.
one foot in the grave. But then again, we're typical Gen X. It's like, I don't care.
Well, and of course, the guys, the men and women I play on Saturday nights, you know, there's still 94-year-old musicians still touring to this date. So yeah.
And the other half are on heroin. So
Abdul said that. But it's kind of stunning. And I remember when popular culture in the 80s made fun of the Rolling Stones. In the 80s.
Yes.
They're still touring.
Like Mick Jagger's older than the president of the United States.
I believe it was the Craig Kilborn version of The Daily Show that they were doing a press conference for their next tour, and it was, the right up at the bottom of the screen said Mick Jagger older than Dirt, and then it was a shot of Keith Richards, Dirt.
Yes.
Yeah, so
full body blood transfusion, Keith.
Right, but you know what? Still with us, and in the briefly period, it looks like Keith might outlive Sir Mick. At least he bounces back more.
Yeah, they'll outlive most rappers.
I'm still waiting for the rap reunion showcase that will be on your local PBS station on Saturday nights, like the doo-wop and soul reviews.
I don't think you're going to be getting Biggie Small and Tupac.
No, I don't mean that. More like Dougie Fresh and the remnants of the Fat Boys.
Or Dougie Not So Fresh.
Talking the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, we're now Tap 2 Diabetes, Fat Boys, yeah.
Jeez. Wow, we're gearing up for the weekend here, folks.
Hey, I just look like this. I'm just happy to be a black man who made it to 50 and didn't get shot.
Send all notes to Abdul Kim Shabazz.
Abdul at IndyPolitics.org.
And how are things at IndyPolitics.org?
We are doing quite well. Had a busy session, obviously, with all the issues like gaming and teacher pay.
So the gaming issue, the Sunday thing, the earth didn't open up and swallow Indiana whole.
Actually, here's the funny thing about gaming, not to get all political on
but you
on
know, we'll get to the movies in a bit.
Yeah, is issues like gaming are a lot like issues like alcohol. It's not really, I mean, there's some of that moral temperance movement, you see the one with the hatchet, cranking open the barrels of whiskey and
Elliot
in a long dress.
Yeah.
Actually, the temperance movement building is actually not far
from here
on Fort Wayne, where it started. A lot of it is, it's geographical. Like, do you have a casino in your district? Because, obviously that affects it. It's generational. Older people, younger people really don't care. Some of it is philosophical. And so it was interesting kind of watching all that play out. But you can now, in Indiana, do sports betting on your phone but you got to go through a casino. So now you can be depressed even more so with your Detroit teams by betting on them.
No, I'm not. I gamble enough with my emotions, yet alone with my dollars. So no, I'm all right with that.
Because I was just looking forward to the stories of you losing like $20 while sitting next to that guy at the bar who pulls.
Oh man, yeah. Abdul's heard my art bar theory. Yeah. We're also going to invest in that the arts bar segment. So
pulls covers overhead.
It's already a bad season for the Tigers. So we'll just.
Heck, my White Sox are eliminated during spring training. So
yeah, that's true. That is true. But I heard on the Score. Yes, I love the Score out of Chicago. But they say Cellular, is it still called U.S. Cellular Field? But the White Sox ballpark has some of the best stadium food in the league.
Yes.
So
and by the
and
way,
not just the ridiculous stuff like a turducken on a waffle on a chicken on a stick and a hot dog.
Like here's a turtle shell.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
What do you do with that? Make a chicken pot pie. I don't know. What's a turtle shell?
But you can get more than hot dogs if you're into that sort of thing. So
and if you really want to know everybody, put ketchup on it.
Oh yeah, boy.
I love that Chicago.
That's
crap.
Still a thing.
Like yes.
Meanwhile, you have a garden salad on your city dog.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fine. All right. So Abdul Kim Shabazz is hanging out with me. We'll get to movies. But opening in theaters this weekend. I know there's a lot, but I got the one I got to see because I've reached a point where if it intrigues me, I want to talk about it. But it's called The White Crow, and it's the latest film starring and directed by Ralph Fiennes. And it's the story of ballet dancer Rudolf Nureyev. And Nureyev has a little place in my heart for me. Because,
I was calling him Nureyev.
Not Nureyev. No, there was somebody that
is... Ladies and gentlemen, the look on his face was priceless.
No, because
for just a moment
it reminds me of, there is a friend of my daughter's who refers to the genre as a biopic. Not a biopic.
A biopic.
It's not an eye surgery procedure. It's a biography movie. Anyway, that's another time. But the power of being able to see things for free with your college ID. When I was at the Ball State University, within the span of a week, I got to see Sam Kinison perform stand-up, and this was in his bearded near the end. The voice was starting to. It was like Willie. Yeah, it was like Willie Mays with the Mets or Michael Jordan with the Wizards. Like, yeah. But then like 5 days later, got to see Rudolf Nureyev dance, and it wasn't just him. It was a ballet showcase, and there were younger, higher, leaping higher folks, but Nureyev could still kind of hold his own. He died about a year after this. But anyway, but it's his story of born on a train in Russia in 1938, and a lot of it falls to when he was a part of the company, the Russian ballet company that went to France in 1961, and kind of Moscow on the Hudson.
Yeah.
Just stayed at the airport for the most part. And early on in the film, and this is credit to Fiennes as a director. He's done a few films as a under the helm of director. Early on, we get some flashbacks upon flashbacks upon flashbacks, and it's not quite Inception. You can still follow it, but it starts to, you wonder when it's going to land, and it really kicks in once we get to him as the member of the company and then enjoying his fame. Going against the rules of ballet. Yes, there are rules to ballet to us flat-footed ones sitting on the front porch.
For example, this is fifth position.
Right. So Fiennes has a small role as an instructor who is able to read Nureyev easier than the taskmaster that has been appointed by the state. And that's the other thing, the whole aspect of this. They tell you when to dance, where to dance, why. And that really tell you why to dance. You just dance. And so Fiennes and the young actor, not really an actor, it is a dancer. It's one of those kind of like Slapshot. Do you get actors who can try to dance, or do you get dancers and they can put a sentence together? They did the latter on this one.
So here's my question. In the early scenes, are there any Cossacks?
No, there's no Woody Allen. There's no, I know that line from Annie Hall. We're not, that scene does not happen.
Okay.
And if you know Woody Allen, it's Annie Hall, you know what I mean? But it really kicks in on the second half, and when he is a little drunk with power, with celebrity, with having an affairs with certain women, and then of course he's informed that he cannot perform in London; he has to perform at the Kremlin, and things take a turn. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, good biopic, and also the fact that early on, when you see there, Ralph Fiennes as the director was smart enough that when there is dancing, you just pull the camera back and let them dance. You're not Richard Attenborough directing Chorus Line. You're not Baz Luhrmann where you're doing 27 shots in one movement. Just letting them dance. So
this isn't Moulin Rouge.
No, it's not. And I love Moulin Rouge. I think Moulin Rouge, because it's that, it embraces its silliness very early on. It's going to be that kind of Red Bull type of musical with the songs of different eras, and it is deliberately this kind of mishmash, and it embraces his energy. Everything since then has been a knockoff of that.
Hey,
that I have a problem with.
Hey, no one can play the Maharaj like you, so see, no one's going to.
That's right. But it's like I'm also reminded. Welcome the two old men on the front stoop. I think it was in the last Taken film where there's supposed to be a simple scene of Liam Neeson. Hold on, of Liam Neeson running, climbing a fence and jumping over, and you could probably do one take, like Ron O'Neill and Superfly, or two takes, and they showed us there was 12 cuts for a simple moment like that. You were closing your eyes and sighing over the Taken series.
Here's my thing.
Yes, sir.
I always looked at the Taken series, since we're now back to movies, kind of like Death Wish. Like
first
fine. Like, have you run out of family yet to be kidnapped? I mean, it's like being related to Charles Bronson. It's like, you know, when your second cousin three times removed is now the crime victim.
Well, and I remember Taken 3 was basically The Fugitive, and nobody asked for that.
Yeah.
So, no, I get it. But, yeah, so anyway, the White Crow, I should say, is at the theaters on the north side, of course, where you get
and
the bar.
And sure this isn't the same one with Mikhail Baryshnikov and Gregory Hines?
No, it's not White Nights. Although, that film was directed by Taylor Hackford, who had already prior to that did An Officer and Gentleman, and that's where he met his still today wife Helen Mirren. Way to go, Taylor! We salute you, sir.
Say you,
yes,
say me.
Say you, exactly. opening now. Oh, actually, you told me before we started that you've seen. By the way, I should remind you, Amazing Grace is still playing at the Art House Theater on the north side of town.
Oh,
so you should take Mrs. Sharon to church. It's a wonderful Aretha Franklin gospel concert film that was a live album. They basically filmed the recording of her album Amazing Grace in a small church in Watts. And the story behind it, and if you've heard previous shows, bear with me. But it was going to be shot by Sidney Pollack. This is what he did after They Shoot Horses, Don't They? And before Jeremiah Johnson. And they were shooting it with a choir and Reverend Cleveland. And yes, her dad shows up. And camera and sound did not sync up. So Warner Brothers had to shelve the film.
Huh.
I also found out later, Warner Brothers was going to put this on a double bill with Superfly.
What?
Yeah, dividing your audience, because is the Amazing Grace crowd going to go see Ron O'Neill and vice versa in 1972?
They would probably go together just to pay for one movie, and then the other half would leave.
And I know, there was old white executives at Warner Brothers that went, let's just throw these two together.
Throw these movies together.
And they sound just like, they sound like Anthony Hopkins and Nixon.
Yeah.
Manolo's finished.
Yeah, Mr. Solsi's finished.
Yeah, that was, yeah. Kind of like a Black Caesar and Five on the black hand side. No, that's not how this works.
No, this we're God.
Yeah, I've made Abdul slap
his forehead. Will love this one. Like, trust me.
Abdul said that.
Abdul at indiepolitics.org.
That's right. So anyway, he's still pondering. Through the power of technology, they were able to sync
it back up.
Finally,
yeah.
Finally. So and it's, you know, it's her at her vocal. It was probably at the height of her vocal powers. And it's not Moulin Rouge. It's just a lot of long takes of her just belting it. So
is her funeral still going on?
No, it's done. Now we have to get into the who has the will portion.
Three of them.
I think the Brown family just wrapped up theirs.
Yeah. No, they found like three wills. And they're trying to figure out which one was the latest one. So
not going
to
be. Not going to be pretty.
Yeah. So here's the legal note of the day. Have a will.
Singular.
Singular. One place.
Update it. Notary public.
An occasional codicil to go with it. There you go.
So yeah, that's happening out there. But anyway, you told me you saw Endgame for a second time.
Yes.
And did it change for you?
It did, in the sense that. Obviously, anybody who's heard me as a guest on Film Sociology or Mr. Sosi and I have done shows together knows I'm a big comic book superhero dork. I mean, that's just.
But are you DC or Marvel or does not matter? I know what tattoo you have.
Yeah,
but you're not exclusive, right?
I have found that DC makes better television shows. Marvel makes better movies.
There you go.
That's probably the best way to.
So you and I don't have the same name of our mothers.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Axel Grease and Butter.
Sorry.
Flavor.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I thought on the second go around, I basically had to bifurcate the movie because I really thought that the first half, seeing it the second time, was a lot slower, and I thought the second half was really on it.
And part of it is because you have so many people. There's so many introductions that you got to get through and the setup. Once the setup is in place and they've made fun of it, then it moves. And I still think there's less endings than Lord of the Rings, and it's still shorter than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and for a while I still did think, and by the way, spoiler alert, which by the way, the movie's been out like a month now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, if you need to fast forward this podcast, please do, but come on.
There's the one scene where they go back to 1972 to get the Tesseract.
Yep.
And I didn't know if that was Kurt Russell driving by in the car or if that was like a Stan Lee cameo.
I thought that was just...
Driving by, yeah,
I know,
because it kind of looked like a little bit like a Stan Lee,
but that's the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2,
the second, yeah.
Which still I love that. That made me giggle for a couple reasons, because there was a certain faction that found young Kurt Russell handsome, and the fact that we now, of course, live in a world where you can CG the face a little bit, like, you know, Sam Jackson looks a little younger in Captain Marvel,
or if you're Moff Tarkin and.
And they're going to do that in, I think they're going to do that with De Niro and Pacino in The Irishman, the new Martin Scorsese film that's coming out on Netflix later this year. But what cracked me up was they were able to give a gloss over for Kurt Russell, but they did nothing to filter his Hateful Eight gravelly voice.
No, they didn't.
That cracks me up. You couldn't put that through a sound filter at all?
Well, actually, I could see them leaving his voice the way it is just to show that he actually is an alien. So,
okay, all right, fair enough. That's a good
comeback. Because he's technically Ego, the living planet, which would...
I thought you were a living planet.
Well, that too. Well, whose voice would be a little graspier, a little rougher.
Fine.
I have come to destroy you. Yeah. that sort of thing.
The black Kurt Russell right here.
Exactly. No, like I said, I thought the first part was a little slower than usual, but the second part was right on the money. And actually, when I saw it the second time, I really didn't see any Easter eggs that I didn't spot the first go-around.
How long a conversation do you think you could have on a battlefield? That's a minor gripe for me.
Yeah, a little minor one. A
little bit. So, but I
was able to figure out actually in the first film, like I said, once again, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it
right
by now, too bad, that when Thor is getting his clock cleaned by the forces of Thanos, and then the...
By the way, I was his wellness coach in this time around. Thank you, Chris.
And when the hammer comes through, I was like, okay, yep, there we go. Because everybody's all applauding, Captain America,
yeah,
you know, swinging the hammer. As soon as we got back to the house... Found the book, like, hey, sweetie, let me show you. Bam, bam, there it is. I felt like Gene Hackman and Superman, you know, pulling out the kryptonite in the National Geographic.
And there's still Soseberg.
Yeah, exactly.
I vote from the day I've met Abdul. I was like, when he takes over, I get broad ripple, and nobody under 30 will be allowed in.
Like, it's all yours. Yeah,
this Tessmacher gets her own country.
This Tessmacher. So yeah, but I thought the second part was really good. The first part was like, God, this is really slow.
I've said this before, and so maybe it's me, but I, you know, it's my show, where I have always felt in the last 10 years they've all been well done. I mean, they're you know, they have various degrees of success and disappointments and everything, but at times it felt like a chore. We grew up on James Bond. We had we're working on 26 James Bond films in over 50 years. We're talking about 22 films in 10. So there was a little bit of burnout for me, and because you could pull off a 3-hour film, you could have done a 3-hour Avengers film a few years ago and it'd been fine.
You see, I didn't necessarily feel burnout. I do think that some were better than others.
Yeah.
And for example, I didn't necessarily mind the Ant-Man and the Wasp. I mean, I get it because they're crucial to the storyline. I don't necessarily think they needed to make two movies when you could have probably maybe done one.
And how do you think the basement dwellers are that the theory about Ant-Man didn't happen? Mom, your Watchmen people?
Yeah. Which, by the way, HBO was doing a series.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
Think they get it right?
I told my wife I'll watch one or two episodes. I did just binge watch, though, The Umbrella Academy.
Okay. That's on the list.
Actually, I think you will like it.
Will I?
Yeah, because it has a couple, and you will appreciate this, kick-ass moments.
with the American trilogy?
Actually, no, but They Might Be Giants, Istanbul was once Constantinople.
Oh my gosh.
When they did that fight scene, I was like, okay, I like this.
Oh, wow. All right, we'll look into that. So I bring up Watchmen. In the 15 years that I've known Mr. Shabazz, I have only seen his dander... muscled up. I've seen his dander up twice. One was on the phone with Eric Michael Dyson.
Yes.
when he referred to you, Brother Shabazz, and you shot back, I'm not your brother. This was the start of the interview. And I think Spangler, oh, this is not going to end well. This is
two oversized egomaniacs.
The Haystacks Calhoun versus Gorilla Monsoon kind of thing. Yeah,
that'd be Haystack.
I believe Gorilla's the immovable force versus the...
Ensemble Object meets the immovable
force. That's what that was. And the comic book dwellers Monday morning press screening of Watchmen. We can't recreate it here, but it was Abdul was Lee Elia for you longtime Cub fans. You're looking around like, okay, I have a job. The critics have a job. What the bleep are you people doing here?
Doing here at a movie theater, at a blanking movie theater at 11 o'clock in the bleeping morning on a bleeping Monday. None of you bleeping bleepers got to go to bleeping work. And it was like a cold January day, too.
It was something like that. And there was, I think there was about 50 people, one female. She was popular. And
yeah, because
and
they had us in the back row, like in the critics section, kind of cornered off from those
you
people.
You were stunned at how many people were there.
Don't you people got a...
Mom, the meatloaf.
Yeah, Matt was like, do we need to call 911? Was that a cardiac arrest? Somebody about to get arrested.
One,
in here.
Two, three. All right, so that is, that's, you know. So, yeah, Endgame is still out there. It's going to be playing all summer
forever.
Long. So will it play when the new Spider-Man opens up?
It may be like on one or two screens.
Okay.
Actually, I do look forward to Spider-Man Far Away From Home. And it was kind of funny because anybody who knew that Spider-Man Far Away From Home was going to be after Avengers Endgame could probably figure out that Spider-Man survives.
Yeah, that's kind of... Well, and that was the other thing. So my other old man grumble from the last Avengers was hearing people my age and older gasping at certain characters fading into powder. And I'm sitting there, that movie made a gajillion dollars. They're going to bring them back.
Trust me. So everybody's coming back. Now, everybody may not stay, but everybody's coming back.
So that kind of grinds my gears a little bit more about the last film itself. So
that's kind of like thinking that Han Solo's going to be stuck frozen in the carbonite.
So, and of course, I was much younger back then. We both were younger. I'm so much older than I'm younger than that now. all right. So that's out there. That's still a thing. New on DVD and Blu-ray.
It's got that look.
The next,
I know that look, ladies and gentlemen.
The next, How to Train Your Dragon.
Part two, the second one?
No, it's the third. Third, fourth? Yeah, there's a lot of those. Do we need that many?
Well, obviously you need it if you're Game of Thrones. You don't need it.
Right. Jeez. The Upside, which is a it's a Kevin Hart film where he doesn't fall down and go boom.
Oh, is that the one where he's with Bryan Cranston?
It's a remake of the French film The Impossibles. I saw The Impossibles, really liked it, where he's a ne'er-do-well, a miscreant who gets a job.
A misanthrope.
Yes, who gets a job for a billionaire quadriplegic, played by Bryan Cranston. Nicole Kidman's in that as well. So it's not the... We joke that Kevin Hart has a new film out every 3 months. This is not one of those. This is something a little more than that. Rebel Wilson's Isn't It Romantic, where she gets bonked on the head and winds up in romantic comedy land. Will Mrs. Shabazz make you watch that?
No.
Okay. Not her thing?
That's not her thing.
Okay.
I mean, she's more right now into the Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes.
On HBO right now.
And also on Blu-ray this week, if you're, of course, a PBS listener, PBS's latest production of Les Mis, Less Singing.
Less Singing.
More Bread Stealing.
Actually, I've heard really good things about it.
Yes. So that is out there if you're not streaming. So and, of course, David Oyelowo is not Russell Crowe in this particular version. Everyone's favorite. One of our favorite types of actors, the English African Americans.
Yes.
One of Abdul's callers referred to Chiwetel Ejiofor as that English African American. No, that's not how this works.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Half English, half Nigerian, no America.
Yeah.
Just thank you, PC police.
Or as we call him, British.
Wait a minute. Yeah, it happens. So over at IU Cinemas, depending on you're listening to the show, if you're listening on Friday, good for you. Friday at 7 o'clock, as a part of the International Art House series, the Peter Jackson documentary, They Shall Not Grow Old, in 3D, where he has taken footage from World War
I. That's right, yeah.
So that is out there. It's still out there.
Did you know the sequel, They Shall Not Pass?
Thank you, Gandalf. Ian McKellen over here. Thursday, May 30th, and Friday, May 31st at 7 o'clock, Amazing Grace. So if you're in Bloomington, you can check that out. Sunday, June 1st, starting at 1 o'clock, all three Matrix films.
Got 9 hours to kill?
Almost 6.5.
Well, it is the 20th anniversary of The Matrix. So that's part of what's sort of done this Matrix sort of reboot.
Really enjoyed the first film. Didn't need the last two.
I liked the first one. The second one was...
Psychobabble.
And the third was okay. And actually, the Wachowski
Siblings.
Siblings?
Yes. That's what we refer to them now.
They are now siblings. They're no longer the Wachowski brothers.
And get over it, folks. It happens. So, yeah, they're so that's out there.
I was a little surprised, in all due brutal honesty, because I don't care.
Right.
That both went, that route, as opposed to just one.
Right.
But then again, they're twins, so.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Exactly. Thursday, June 6th, Friday, June 7th at 7 o'clock from 2018, Crystal Swan, not Black Swan. Saturday, June 8th at 4 o'clock. Oh, here's a double bill. This is not a double feature. These are separate admissions, separate tickets, but hey. Saturday, June 8th at 4 o'clock, Cat Video Fest 2019.
What?
Yes, a compilation of cat videos.
I'm sure there'll be one playing a piano.
1 o'clock from 4 to about 5:10. So
this is dedicated to Grumpy Cat?
Sky Point to Grumpy Cat. Doesn't sound like Aubrey Plaza, but Sky Point to Grumpy Cat. And then at 7 o'clock, the National Theater live production of All About Eve with Gillian Anderson as Margot Channing. Very excited about seeing that. So that is all happening at IU Cinema at the Tibbs. They call it the Tibbs Drive-In. Oh, yes. On screen one, yes, there is the Blueface remake of Aladdin with Will Smith as the genie. Guess what? Will Smith, not Robin Williams. You can read Chris Lloyd's review of this on the Film Yap, and he, of course, gave it the backhanded compliment, not terrible.
Because, like I said, when I went and saw The Avengers again, that was one of the previews. And I was like, I guess Disney either is so out of ideas that we're now just live-actioning
this
everything.
This is the third, because Lion King hasn't happened yet. So you had Cinderella, you had Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, Dumbo.
Dumbo. Yeah, that's true. So this is the fourth. So, yes, you can hire Indian actors to play the Indian roles, and then you got Will Smith rapping at the closing credits. I know that much. It's tough.
You ain't never had a friend like me. Say that again.
So that's at 9:20 with Avengers Endgame. So that's not a bad double bill. You get a lot of time.
But here's a question though: when they did the remake of The Lion King, did they get Jeremy Irons to play Scar?
No, I believe Chiwetel Ejiofor is playing Scar.
You have no idea.
Right? Exactly. Actually, let's look that up. But I believe. What they're
Jackie Robinson is playing Scar?
No, that's Chadwick Boseman. Hi, welcome to Correcting African American Actors and Black Actors from Europe, hosted by Matthew Sosa.
You have a little routine like this. No, he was not that. He was in that.
Right. Let's John Favreau. So Donald Glover is Simba. Chiwetel Ejiofor is Scar. Of course, James is getting Mufasa. You have to beat him up to get that role away from him. Keegan-Michael Key is Kamari.
Where's Madge Sinclair?
Beyonce is Nala. Alfre Woodard is Savari. All right. John Oliver is Zazu. Makes sense. Anyway, so I get it. And Seth Rogen is Pumbaa. So.
This is where the monarchy is headed. Count me out. Out of service. Out of Africa.
Right. So anyway, that is happening. Aladdin and Endgame at screen one. Screen two, the Mrs. Shabazz double feature, Brightburn and the Intruder.
Isn't Brightburn supposed to be like the new...
He's a evil superhero in child form or something like that.
Because I've been seeing a lot of advertisements on Facebook.
You've been trying to dodge that one with the lovely Mrs. Shabazz.
I'm like, hey, what is this?
Yeah, that's a thing. Screen 3, John Wick 3, and The Long Shot.
I
like the first two. Even though I'm burnt out on sequels, I do like the John Wick series.
Okay, I've never seen the John Wick series, but I'm told in 3 he loses. He's looking for his dog.
Well, that's the whole thing starts because of the dog. So, another dog.
Okay.
But I think because you have stunt coordinators directing these films, so the fight scenes and the gunplay look really cool. And apparently that taps into the inner 15-year-old in certain audience. So, anyway, that's out there. Screen 4. Oh, boy. The Hustle, which is the female version of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson.
I'd go for Anne Hathaway.
Yes. And A Dog's Journey. Ooh.
Bring the Kleenex.
Talking Dog with Josh Gad. So anyway, that is happening at the Tibbs, at the Skyline in, You have Aladdin, Detective Pikachu,
And then on May 25th, only at 1:30 a.m., The Intruder. So on the 25th, you can get a triple feature there. Yeah.
That means we'll go on the 26th?
Maybe. Over at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin, 24th and 25th. Friday. So if you're listening to the show today at 7:30 p.m. And then Saturday, there's a 2, 7:30, and 10:30 screenings of Grease. You and I are just old enough to play high school members of Rydell High in that film.
I think I'd be playing Sid Caesar.
Maybe. Yes, I make fun because Stalker Channing was 33 when she played Rizzo. And apparently 10:30 show will be the interactive singing, dancing, quote. So basically you get to yell at the screen.
You see, here's what I remember. Back in my FM disc jockey days, and before law school, that was 1997. It was like the 20th anniversary.
Oh, God. Did you have to replay that stuff?
It just went on over and over and over again. I was like, my God. And my son's high school did Grease. I was just like.
Really?
Yes.
Was he in it?
Yep.
Who'd he play?
Oh.
He's too young. You know, they're high school age.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, who's the one character? He was one of the Lords of Flatbush.
One of them. That's a different movie
Same Italians.
I know they all look the same.
They all look the same. Same John Travolta, Sylvester Stallone, Henry Winkler, and then that other guy.
That other guy.
They did the song, What's That Playing on the Radio? Because the musical version is different than the version.
Because there was a stage version, folks. Because the stage version didn't sound like disco reheated in the 70s. Sorry. Yeah. It's just too much disco in a film set in the 50s that wasn't Moulin Rouge.
No, it wasn't. So I just remember. Okay.
Well, that's I'm sure the Art Craft Theater is loving this. So that is happening there. And then you can mark your calendars May 31st and June 1st at 2 and 7:30 p.m. The Goonies. I know people love this. Maybe I need to revisit it. I wasn't a huge fan when it came out.
I used to play the video game.
Of course there was a video game. Tuesday, June 4th at 10 a.m., The First Ice Age.
Now, The First Ice Age I actually thought was really good.
Yes.
I liked it.
So
Ice Age 2.
Don't need four of those.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then June 7th, 7:30 p.m., 35mm print. And this is the Real Women Vintage Wine series. I guess guys can show up too. But A Knight's Tale. Another film that borrows from the Moulin Rouge template of, okay, we're going to do medieval times, but we're also going to use the music of Queen. So, and Mark Addy's in it, and Heath Ledger. So, anyway, that
another one turns to dust.
Oh. All right, midnight movies. What was the last time you went to a midnight movie, sir?
The last midnight movie I actually went and saw was the first Avengers film.
Oh, very good, very good.
Now, the midnight showing.
Has your wife gone to a midnight movie yet?
She can't stay up that long.
You have to. I know the next day worthless, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, so let's see if these entice you at all. At the Keystone Arts, of course, real butter cocktails. June 7th and 8th, the Nicolas Cage film Mandy, which I've heard it's bat spit crazy, and he did this not to clear out his debt. He just wanted to do a crazy film, so possibly. The Goonies, back June 14th and 15th. June 21st and 22nd, the Japanese animated film Perfect Blue. June 28th and 29th, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Emma really wants to see that in midnight movies. July 5th and 6th, The Dark Crystal.
Okay, I'll probably go see that.
I need to revisit that as well. I think I was.
Isn't Mike Dukakis in that?
You know, he just looks like it. That's an old Dennis Miller bit. Yeah, that was. Because this was before Labyrinth. I revisited Labyrinth earlier this year, and you know, I was 16 when that film came out. I think I was 12 when The Dark Crystal came out, and I think that's when some of the cinematic debaggery started to evolve.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't want to see The Dark Crystal. I'm going to go see My Dinner with Andre. I was that kid, I know. July 12th and the 13th at Midnight Movies at Keystone Art, The Room, Tommy Wiseau's masterpiece. You'll hear my interview with Tommy Wiseau later this summer.
Oh, by the way, jumping back to Dark Crystal.
Yes, sir.
That reminded me of an old Billy Ocean video.
Real? Oh. Not?
Loverboy.
They used some
because
of that.
Because they used a lot of like a futuristic kind of stunt Dark Crystal-ish type.
The early 80s incarnation of what the future is if it wasn't shoulder pads.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's wearing shoulder pads and football helmets.
and chain link fences and all. Yeah. Wow. Did you have to play a lot of Billy Ocean when you were starting?
Actually, my mother loves Billy Ocean.
Yes.
She was a big Billy Ocean fan, and as you know, my mother has Alzheimer's, so whenever we go visit her, we try to stream Billy Ocean on our phones to kind of make her smile, because actually musical therapy actually really does goes a long way.
Take note, folks.
I'm not sure half these horrible movies that I come across.
We'll get to that. July 19th and 20th, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I always ask this question, which I need to revisit. Now that we are parents' age, is Ferris Bueller kind of a bag?
No.
Just checking.
No, Ferris Bueller is making the system work for him.
Oh, that's you. Was there a Save Abdul coffee cans around the high school when you were younger?
Hey, Ferris never broke the rules. He made the rules work for him.
Look at this. Look at this. All right, good.
And actually, I think my aunt is in that movie.
Say what? Oh, and they shot in the city.
And they shot in the city. There's a scene where they're doing the twist and shout, and they go to
the
different screen shots, and there's an older African-American woman in there. I was like, if that's not my aunt, she's got a
He pulls up?
Not that he pulls up, but she's like one of the just people in the...
And she was bitter about that.
In the crowd. I was like,
I could have danced.
I was like, I really think that's Aunt Fanny.
Was there a parade going on and they hopped on, or did they actually block the streets to create that?
I think
that
they just
moment?
Blocked the streets to create the...
Well, John Hughes had some pull in Chicago back then. So long as he wasn't trashing it like the Blues Brothers did about 6 years prior.
Yeah, exactly.
It was kind of that because the mayor of Chicago at that time.
Old man Daley.
Was it Daley that
I
did
it? I think Daley was still.
I thought it was. Who was the lady mayor?
Jane Byrne.
Double check that. Okay, timeline.
Okay, yeah, no. If it's post-1977, it is Jane Byrne.
Jane Byrne basically opened up a blank check to the city. Basically open the keys of the city to the Blues Brothers. And if you've seen the Blues Brothers, it kind of set the bar, like, okay, we're not going to do that again. So, and anyway, July 19th and 20th.
I love you, sir.
Yes. July 26th and 27th, the first Jurassic Park. Andy and Amy, take note. August 2nd and 3rd, Princess Mononoke. Always good to have Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli. August 9th and 10th, Donnie Darko. August 16th and 17th.
Is that what I think it is?
August 16th and 17th, David Lynch's Eraserhead.
Yes!
My favorite Eraserhead moment, yes, there is one. I was managing a crummy video store in Carroll Springs, Illinois, and I did not want to play the new titles because I had already seen them.
So did Jay and Silent Bob stop by?
No, they were not by, but it felt like that. Let's put it this way. The back room made more money than the front room. We were open till 11:30, so it'd be 11:29.
I'm like,
come on, man, pick something and let's wrap up. But my job,
written an hour movie.
Yeah. But I would pick the stuff, what I call the center of the video store. That's where the old titles were, because I thought, if I'm going to get low wages at this crummy job, I'm going to at least watch stuff I had not seen before. And my boss always kind of poo-pooed that until I found a tape that was chewed up. So I was looking, inventory, quality control. And so she allowed me to do this. And I was really good with the pause button. When somebody came into the shop, I lost a little off my edge and didn't quite pause it fast enough when a woman and her little girl came in during the birth of the maggot scene in Eraserhead.
Yeah.
So, yeah. See that? That's one of the original origins of the Midnight movie from 1980?
Now, my thing was...
It's 79.
I never worked in a video store, but when it's winter weekend, it's going to be cold and crappy out.
We'll
go by the video store on Friday, pick a bunch of movies for the weekend.
Yep.
I would always have the new release, the dollar release, and then the art film.
One for each of your palettes.
One for each genre.
What art films were you renting then? Because you make fun of my art taste.
Well, for me, it would be something like Quiz Show. That would I consider my kind of artsy art film.
All right.
Stuff like that.
Great film, though.
Yeah, kind of very, very, very mainstream. Oh, look, there's Battleship Potemkin.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
cool.
Oh, look, there's Nosferatu. Yeah.
Which one? Silent or Werner Herzog?
Herzog.
There you go.
And then one time I saw The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay,
that's where that comes from. Yep, good. And then...
See, I can keep up with you.
I know you can. Patti LaBelle's band reference from first Richard Pryor concert. And then August 23rd and 24th at Keystone Arts, Pulp Fiction.
Sorry. Pulp Fiction did nothing for me.
Oh, it did everything for me. Didn't you just come back from Germany?
No, we were already here because that was like, what, 94-ish?
Yeah, 94.
It did nothing for me.
Nonlinear storytelling, mixture of genre, knowing your genre really, really well, the pulpy novel types, a whole different style of language, wall-to-wall music that had not been heard for a long, long time, and revitalized some careers.
Yeah, because Pulp, and actually I really didn't understand it until the Simpsons parody of Pulp Fiction.
Really?
Then it made sense.
So my my lovely daughter, who is 17, and yeah, I still owe her a midnight movie. This started when she was about 10 or 11. But she really wanted to go to Keystone Arts and see Beetlejuice. And I said, well, if I look over at 12:30 and you're asleep, I'm not going to be happy. So these are moments, I know you've had these, I call it pop culture Atticus Finch. And I would say, you can watch a midnight movie at home, and if you stay awake for it, we'll go see something. I still need to cash in on that. But it was a snowy January. I was working here. I got off the air Saturday night at 10. We were staying at our in-laws because they lived in town. And got home to their house about 10:30, and I always brought a bag of movies with me just in case. And that night, Emma said, "Dad, I want to take the test," and she picked Pulp Fiction. So we waited till midnight, and we watched it. And then at 2:45, I looked at her and I said, "You know, what'd you think?" She goes, "I really liked it." And I said, "Okay." And she goes, "One thing though," and she took my hand, stood up, and she goes, "Walk me through it." She wanted to know chronologically where things started and where things ended. So, anyway, that is August 23rd and 24th.
Now, did she watch the whole thing?
Whole thing.
The whole thing.
Yeah, that was a little uncomfortable.
Okay,
yeah.
I was kind of wondering how you dealt with that.
No, we've had worse moments as dad-daughter day at the movies. We're fine.
Okay.
We laugh about the – we can now. The other one was the Spike Jonze film Her, the one with Joaquin Phoenix who falls in love with the AI voice.
Yeah.
Because there's a scene where she wanted to see it. I did not drag her to this. I really wanted to see it, and she was intrigued. So we knew nothing going in of he's in bed, and he's tapping his Bluetooth, trying to find somebody to talk to, and, of course, they start talking, and it gets heavier and heavier. And there's this – when moments like this happen, Emma and I kind of lean in the opposite direction of each other in our seat to give each other a little more room. Because we don't do the space between us. We're not guys in an action movie. And it's really starting to get uncomfortable. And then the female voice finally says, "Strangle me with a dead cat." And that kind of broke the tension. And we could not stop laughing. And that broke the tension there. So.
Okay. Yeah, because kind of like when my...
what was your version of that?
Well, it was my parents would watch... You know, they would love their black 70s exploitation films because that's their...
By the way, what should be an auction item piece is movie night with you and your dad and me. So
exactly.
John Wayne and Fred Williamson in one evening, boy.
Oh, look, it's Marion.
You don't say that. No. But anyway, you're watching what's 70s?
I can't remember which one. I think it was maybe like it was Hell Up in Harlem or...
Black Caesar.
Some with Fred Williamson. And there's like the weird obligatory sex scene.
Oh yeah, it goes a little long.
Pops up, and then there's my mom, my dad, and me, and I'm like, okay, yeah.
How old were you? Was mom still at the eye covering portion of the family or no?
No, this was 88, 89.
Oh gosh, you're
so like 20 years old-ish. Oh, yeah. Home from college for the summer.
You it's that thing where you're watching it. Well, in their case, they're watching it, and then they realize, uh-oh, the scene's coming up.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, Fred had, and Jim, too, had to have their skin moment.
Yes, they did.
And we'll get to not their films, below their films in a little bit.
A lot of that, folks.
There's film sociology. You're listening to Film Sociology with Abdul-Hakim Shabazz, jerk of all trades, master of chicanery.
Master of some.
That's right. And, of course, one half of the imaginary morning show, Abdul and the Kaiser. Mornings. We don't know where. But you know what? You don't have enough money for the two of us.
No, you don't.
Anyway, at Newfields, just mark your calendars. This is coming up as the 2019 National Bank of Indianapolis Summer Nights Film Series lineup. That's a big marquee. June 7th, Say Anything.
Yeah.
Put down the boombox.
Yeah.
I'm trying to sleep. June 14th, the original 1954 Sabrina. William Holden, Humphrey Bogart, Audrey Hepburn.
Not Harrison Ford and...
Greg Kinnear and Julia Ormond, which is not bad. It's not bad, but it's not the original. June 15th, the original 1988 John Waters film Hairspray, which I've shown to Emma in her younger days. She doesn't remember it, and she loves the musical, but I enjoy John Waters, and I believe this might be...
Was this the John Travolta one?
No, that's the musical. This is the one... where it's Divine.
Divine is
in it. Ricky Lake. Yeah. And it's a good film. It's not 70s John Waters by any stretch of the imagination, but it does make fun of that television world and you know, the divided city of Baltimore. Ruth Brown is Motormouth Maybelle. Always good. So that is there. June 21st, the original 1967 The Producers.
Okay. Dancing Hitler's on the left, singing Hitler's on
the
right.
So there is that. June 28th, Suspicion, the Hitchcock film with Joan Fontaine and Cary Grant from 1941. June 29th, Independence Day.
Well, see, but
the
actually,
keys are in the visor.
Yeah, see, but here's the thing. Actually, the first Independence Day I actually really liked.
Because he stopped aliens with an apple.
Well, that thing can't interface with anything on this planet, so it only makes sense that you interface it. Well, that and my other favorite scene in the movie is when they finally figure out, you know, how to bring the shields down, and they start communicating with, you know, old Morse code.
Yeah.
And you got the British commander and the Arab and Israeli troops in the Sinai Desert, blah, blah, blah. Like, sir, it's the Americans. They figured out a way to bring the shields down. Well, it's about bloody time.
So that is June 29th. July 5th, Ghost. Make some pottery. And then July 13th through the 20th, the entire Harry Potter canon.
Wow.
Sorcerer's Stone on the 13th, Chamber of Secrets on the 14th, Azkaban on the 15th, Goblet of Fire on the 16th, Order of the Phoenix on the 17th, Half-Blood Prince on the 18th, and you could have made Deathly Hallows 3.5 hours and have been fine. But no, part one on the 19th, part two on the 20th.
I'm going to surprise you. I actually own every Harry Potter film.
So do we. No, do we? Yeah, we do too. We do too. You still could have made a 3-hour
It was really
climax.
More just out of just so I could say I own it. It was kind of like books you buy just so they're on the shelf.
Your coffee table books.
Yeah.
You still have my movies.
I have several.
You still have a few of my movies, by the way.
Hey, at least you know they're with your lawyer, so they're safe.
Have you watched them?
I do. I have watched Advice and Consent.
You like it?
Yeah.
It's good. It's good.
You know me in political movies.
I know. That's why I got it to you. I think a couple of the films I let you borrow, I wound up buying again, so I could have talked to me.
Speaking of which, I actually sat down and DVR'd Little Caesar.
It's a good film. I love 30s gangster movies, so...
Yeah, that whole Edward G. Robinson...
He's more than just your Messiah, see?
Yeah.
Yeah, when Moses isn't around, he's a bad dude.
I told my wife, like, honey, he was in the Ten Commandments. Like, no, he wasn't. Like,
yes, he was. Oh, yes, he was. Now you got to show her Double Indemnity.
Mm-hmm. I was like, and by the way, this was groundbreaking because this was, like, violent.
This was a violent-ass movie back then, so, yeah.
It's like, what, 33-ish?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just King Kong, darling.
Nope.
And Dracula.
Ms. Rudolph. July 26th at Newfields, the Indie Shorts International Film Festival. August 2nd, from 1944, to Have and Have Not, Bogart and Bacall. Hmm. August 9th, Bring It On, from 2000. That's the first one. That's the one, yeah. August 16th, Moana, from 2016, wrapping Dwayne Johnson. August 17th, Members Only. Ooh. Not, no, you don't have to wear the jackets
there.
No, that
jacket.
But the original 1968 Thomas Crown Affair.
Huh.
And then August 23rd, 13 Assassins from 2010. I'm impressed that they picked 13 Assassins. That's a great fight movie if you're a fan of martial art films. And then finally, on August 30th, the original 1971 Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So All of that is happening at Newfields. The 2019 National Bank of Indianapolis Summer Nights Film Series lineup.
Here's the issue I had with Willy Wonka.
Oh, please.
I thought it was there's a scene there with just a little, made me feel just a little like that's kind of creepy. All these people
sharing
a bed. That part.
Oh, well, and of course, John Mulaney and a few other comics have brought up the fact, oh, now you get up, Grandpa, because you're getting a tour?
Yeah.
By the way, we've also reached an age where my childhood isn't exactly ruined if a remake comes. You don't have to see it. But not only did I not mind the remake of Willy Wonka or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory done by Tim Burton, they got one thing right. Charlie's a good kid. Didn't need Gene Wilder blowing up at the kid and making it a test. By the way, if a parent did that, CPS
yes,
would
be
coming
right
in.
By the door.
And the door, and yes, the boat scene is weird, and I can't remember if that's in the book or not. It's just odd.
Here's my rule on remakes. Remakes don't bother me if they're done right and there was like a reason for it.
Like the example I like to use is Martin Scorsese's Cape Fear. It's, you know, it is what he does to change the original is he makes the victim family dysfunctional. So they have to work together even though they can't stand each other.
And see, and some remakes are good. Planet of the Apes. Some remakes And some remakes are bad. Planet of the Apes.
You're talking the Tim Burton version in the latter.
Yeah, the Tim Burton version.
But the first new wave of Planet of the Apes, surprisingly good because the last version by Burton with Mark Wahlberg was pretty bad.
Yeah, and the only reason I watch it because it's just so bad that I just
and also the fact with Planet of the Apes, and by the way, actually, really, it's the Andy Serkis show, but that's an example of technology has caught up.
And also, I think there's a difference between a remake and a reboot.
And that's a reboot.
Yeah.
That's a reboot. You could say, the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes is a remake.
Yeah. This has the power of a thousand spears.
Yeah, Brittany.
Damn them.
All right.
Damn them all.
here we go, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here. And that's Charlton Heston dying, too. Damn you all the hell. Abdul-Hakim Shabazz of Indie Politics is hanging out with me. So sent to me recently through Mill Creek Entertainment, it's a two-disc collection of films from the 70s. Black exploitation films from the 70s. Black exploitation. Or as Fred Williamson always said, my check's cleared, who's getting exploited?
Yes.
You get the idea.
Yeah.
These are not the Fred and Jim films.
This is not the Truck Turners.
No, this is that at least had a studio. You know, you at least had Sam Arkoff or Roger Corman behind you
a little bit. Foul mouth and Nichelle Nichols.
By the way, we're gonna get to her in a minute because there's some of that in this collection. So we start with from 1973. Now you'll let me know if your dad experienced these. There was a film called The Black Six. This is about six black bikers, all played by, at that time, current NFL football players.
Like Rosie Greer?
Rosie Greer's not in this. He's in this collection. We'll get to him.
See, this with two heads?
No, that's not in this. So, by the way, thing with two heads, more of a budget than these films. But this is a group of bikers in which one of the biker members' brother is killed by the small racist town, and they have to go and make things right. But
didn't see that coming.
Yes, but we have Gene Washington from the San Francisco 49ers, Carl Eller from the Minnesota Vikings. I love talking, especially 70s sports with Abdul. I'm getting a blank wall. Lem Barney from the Detroit Lions, my beloved Detroit Lions. Mercury Morris from the Miami Dolphins. Willie Lanier from the Kansas City Chiefs, and the big name in this is 1973, so they were Mean Joe Green from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Really? Also in this, playing the evil biker gang member Thor, Ben Davidson, for you Miller Lite commercial fans, and also making an appearance as the coach, he's called Coach, a just recently retired from baseball, Maury Wills.
Ooh.
These guys.
So here's a question.
Yes,
who is
sir.
who is the famous white actor who
That's
plays
Ben Davidson?
Okay.
No, there's not even that in this.
Yeah, because usually in the exploitation genre.
Thank you, John Vernon, and I'm going to get you started.
John Vernon and Angie Dickinson, Big Bad Mama.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, don't worry. I'll bring up if there is a token white name. But no, in this one it's Ben Davidson. So, Mean Joe Green actually oozes more charisma in the Coke commercial than he does in this.
Throwing his old sweaty shirt at
something. Yeah, some white kid. But these are all Army vets out of Vietnam, and they're just on their bikes, just hitting the road. It's all actually Southern California. That whole Southern California country that could pose as the South, kind of, maybe.
As long as we're on a lot of mash.
Yeah, kind of that. But they in an early scene, you see them go to an old lady's farm and help out around the farm, an old white lady. So they're baling hay and then they get fed a meal, and they're going to sleep out on the barn because, I'm sorry, they don't have enough. Mm. They don't have 6 guest rooms. And so we find them frolicking in the hay bale and throwing hay bales at each other because they're football players. Let's put it this way. These guys make Jim Brown look like William Marshall.
Wow.
As far as acting chops and charisma.
Yeah, we'll have the decency not to tell anybody.
Yeah, that's And the film ends with, and there's a big biker fight scene near the end. But at the end of the film, written on the screen, "Honky, look out, hassle a brother, and the Black Six will return."
Wow.
There was no sequel to this film.
Apparently there was no message received.
There was not. Okay. The next film, which I had seen before, and now it's on here, The Black Gestapo. So you have a black military group,
mm-hmm.
nobody affiliated with the feline group.
So this isn't Spook Who Sat by the Door.
No. This is, let's put it this way. This is how clever they are. There's at the beginning of, during the title, the credit sequence, there's footage of Hitler, and then they reverse the negative. Get it? So this is a group that calls them, please tell me I have this written down. Oh, wow, I don't have the organization, but they are, so you have a group, they have military-looking garb, again, they're not the feline group that of this time, and of course, there's corruption within the group, and there's a Yago of sorts, and he's second in command, but he wants to really be first in command, and we find out that, a guy who's actually one of the better officers of this army is finding out that there is corruption and greed amongst the group. So, there's paybacks and white women poolside and all this. Yeah, you're looking this up. Here's the name, now a named person, then a young unknown actor who plays the turncoat. Charles Robinson.
From Night Court?
Yep.
Max?
Yep. This is 1974. Get your stuff. 73 or 72. Yeah. Abdul is clicking online as we speak. I'm not making this up. So, yeah. And there's the moment where early in the film you see the members of this army beat up the white thugs that are taking shakedown money from the black business owner, and then 10 minutes later, the
Lee
officer.
Frost.
Yep, Lee Frost directing
West Bishop.
It. Yep. And then the same shop, the soldiers show up and wind up taking the shakedown money instead.
And Rod Perry as General Ahmed.
Yep. Yeah. So that's out there. It's also a part of this collection, Soul Cinema. The one film that didn't make it in the theaters.
Black Shampoo?
No, that's not
The
out
Dynamite
here.
Brothers?
No, that's not
Coffee?
Out here. Oh, you're talking, are you doing his film
The Bad Bunch?
No, that's not on here.
Black Girl. I mean, there's not a whole lot of creativity in these titles.
Yeah, I know.
Disco Godfather.
I actually own Disco Godfather by Rudy Ray Moore. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you probably own Bucktown. Because if you
want
to
Bucktown,
you got to get down.
That's right. The one film that they tried to pass off as a movie, even though it's a TV movie, The Black Brigade. This was like The Dirty Dozen, except
they were
half. And it wasn't Lee Marvin. It was Stephen Boyd. For you fans of Ben-Hur. And it's a soldier, Germany, 1944. And instead of getting these soldiers who'd been digging latrines and filling latrine holes, they have to go and blow up a bridge or blow up a dam in Germany. Your 1970 Aaron Spelling produce TV movie. Your soldiers include your second in command is Robert Hooks. So he has some chest bumping scenes with Stephen Boyd. Richard Pryor in an early role. Rosie Grier, as we mentioned, he's the biggest of the lot. Moses Gunn, he's the oldest of the lot. Glenn Turman, he's the writer of the lot.
Dr. War from Different World.
And Cochise from Cooley High.
Yep.
And young, fresh-faced Billy Dee Williams as the loud one in this. So, yeah. And then
Hilton Jacobs as the Beaver. No,
he's not in this one. But yeah, this was, and I believe they tried to make a black version of MASH on television.
Call it MASH.
Sort of based on, I'm not answering that. So anyway, that is, yeah, co-written and produced by Aaron Spelling. Then 1974, Black Fist, where you have a former boxer who goes into the seedy underworld of street boxing. And it's Richard Lawson, who's done a lot of stuff. I remember him from Stick and the Knights of Molly Dowd, if I remember right.
And Family Feud.
No, he's not. That's Dawson. But your token white guy, 1974, that guy, Dabney Coleman, as a corrupt cop who gets his share of the take for
Mr. Hart Spoxer's from 9 to 5.
That's right.
And actually, he had a show on Fox for a little while.
He had a couple of series for a while. But this is one. Oh, Art. Also, this has. Is this? No, this is not it. But this one has some not bad fight scenes for a low budget film. But it's one of those where he's trying to get under the, he's supported by a mobster, and then he's trying to get a bigger cut. And then once he's gotten some success and he's bought a nightclub, he wants to get out of the business. And of course, they keep drawing him back in. Yeah, there's that.
This is called The Plot to Power on Showtime.
And then from 1974, The Black Godfather.
Yes, I saw it. That was on my
Rod
list.
Perry. And we have basically a guy who's trying to get the Italian mob out of the ghetto. They, black owned, black operated. And this was the
B&B.
It's the film debut. This has a special place for me. It's the film debut of Flint actor Tony Burton. Tony Burton is known for two things in pop culture. He was Apollo Creed's trainer, so he got to be a part of that whole franchise. And of course, he got a small part in Stephen King's The Shining, the Stanley Kubrick film. Now, according to legend, Tony Burton was a famous chess player on movie sets, as was Kubrick. And apparently, Tony Burton defeated Stanley Kubrick at chess.
Huh.
I hope that's true. So. But yeah, not a whole lot of notes on this one. Yeah, Damu King is in it, Don Chastain, Rod Perry, and then finally from 1978, it was originally called Death Force, and then it became Fighting Mad, and it's a soldier who's back from Vietnam, and he's going to help out with a job in the Philippines. And he's double-crossed, thrown into the water, and he winds up on a remote island in the Philippines that it's occupied by two Japanese soldiers from World War II.
You want to know what? I think I may have actually seen
and
this.
And the two soldiers trained, is it James Iglehart, who was also in Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, and they train him in the samurai way. And
he goes back.
He gets healed. Well, the two names in this, sort of, from 1978, because playing one of the double-crossing soldiers who's now back and working his way through in the crime world, Leon Isaac and Jane Kennedy is in this. Yep, everyone's favorite NFL commentator. So yeah, they're in.
Well, Jane Kennedy actually did have a major crush on as a 10-year-old.
Gorgeous, yeah. This one's probably one of the better ones of the group because the fight scenes are a bit ridiculous, and it sets it up. Revenge is coming, and it's coming quick in about 90 minutes. So, but yeah, there's some fun fight scenes in this, and ridiculous. Leon Isaac really, really wanted to act. This is, I believe, before Penitentiary. Took himself seriously. Let's put it that way.
How many penitentiaries were there? Like three?
I think there were three, maybe four. And by the way, that was near the. This was when the blaxploitation era was at death knell.
Yeah,
that
I was about to.
By 78, 79, no, they've moved on to other things. So yeah. Anyway, yeah, all six of those films on two DVDs, courtesy of Mill Creek Entertainment.
Wow. First of all, it was going to be like the Curse of the Mud Creek Players.
Thank you. I'll let them know about that. Mm-hmm. Now, a few other titles that were sent, courtesy of Film Movement, the Polish drama Nina, which has two ladies meeting, doing a, not necessarily a meet-cute, but... one is a lesbian who works as an airport security officer, not a word, and then the other one is a teacher who's married and wants to have a child, and they bring this young lady in, the airport security lady, to be a surrogate, and a different triangle happens. Yeah, there you go. Good performances happy. By the ladies. Yeah. So, yeah, something. But anyway. It's yes, you've figured out that puzzle, but good performances by the ladies. There's a Dutch documentary called Bosch, The Garden of Dreams, famous painting of imagine Sunday in the Park with George, but yeah. With more characters and detail in the painting. And it's actually a really cool look at everybody brings their own point of view to a painting. I'm going to get philosophical here. Your own history, your own background. And so there's your own point of view. Also, the amount of detail and imagery that is in this photo, in this painting, in this artist's work is fascinating to look. And the film features everyone from artists, philosophers, musicians, writers, all talking about what they got out of this painting. So imagine. So have a glass of wine in hand as you watch this.
So none of this is The Sorrow and the Pity.
It's not. It's shorter, way shorter than The Sorrow and the Pity, and not Swedish. But anyway, that's. I believe the quote was, "You could write a novel about this painting very easily, a novel with 1,000 stories." That's that type of painting. So if you're into art on film, this is there for
it's
you.
An art film.
And then finally from France, the drama Never Ever. About two artists, male, female, one older man, younger woman. They have a very quick affair going. They go to his country house, and about halfway through the film, he dies, but his presence is still there. But it's not a haunted house film. There is some suspense elements to it. It's not a Mrs. Shabazz film.
Mm-hmm.
It does not become dumb haunted house movie.
It's not like she looks in the mirror when she's washing her face.
No,
and back up and then
he's there.
Like that.
He's there in some ways, but
in spirit,
but not in terror.
Okay.
So Julia
Sounds like Ghost Dad.
Better than Ghost Dad, funnier than Ghost Dad. Don't take a drink from Ghost Dad. But Julia Waugh is the lead lady, and then Mathieu Amalric, who was the villain in Quantum of Solace. So yes, he's got a Bond villain credit under his note, and a Diamond Bell and a Butterfly. So anyway, all of those are available on DVD, courtesy of Film Movement. So what else have you watched recently, sir?
Like I said, it was The Avengers Endgame,
and then Little Caesar.
Yeah, Little Caesar.
That's really good. And no crazy bread with that.
No crazy bread. But like I said, I just finished binge watching The Umbrella Academy on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of in that sort of X-Men kind of vein, kind of like the anyone who's ever read the X-Men over time, it's like the Dark Phoenix saga, but not quite X-Men The Last Stand.
Are you excited for Dark Phoenix?
I am.
You're pessimistic or optimistic?
I try to be skeptically optimistic.
That's your memoir title.
That's my memoir title. The skeptic optimist.
Yeah, Optimus Prime.
Yeah. I want it to be good. I want it to be enjoyable. But knowing the Dark Phoenix story and seeing it already done before, like in the first X-Men kind of trilogy, it's sort of
will this woman crush men to death with her legs? Hi, Famke Janssen.
Yeah.
Sania on the top.
Now I did like when they did sort of the X-Men reboot. Really liked X-Men First Class. I thought that was interesting. Really loved Days of Future Past. I thought that was actually the best one out of all three. X-Men Apocalypse. It was okay. As long as you go matinee, keep your expectations low.
Right.
You know, you're fine.
Do you think, well, I'll say How can you explain why X-Men weren't involved in the more of the Marvel stuff?
It's basically who owns the rights to what.
Ah.
Because not everybody, Marvel has lots of properties. And so what you'll do is you'll get a situation where, you know, we'll say Paramount bought the rights to the Avengers franchise, but 20th Century Fox owns the rights to the, say, the X-Men and the Fantastic Four franchise.
Is this quicker to explain than Captain Marvel and Shazam?
actually, it's pretty much this, it's that, similar. That, it's that same.
Okay.
In that same vein. And also, with respect to that, not only do you buy the rights to certain characters, you can only buy the rights, in some places you only buy rights to certain characters from certain periods.
Mm-hmm.
For example, early on in some of the cartoon stuff, the Storm character, they got like normal Storm, but not Mohawk Storm. because you have different characters through different.
Halle Berry didn't want to cut her hair.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it just depends on who owns.
Okay.
What.
Okay, all right. Did you see Shazam?
Actually, yes. I liked it.
DC needed to make a lightweight movie badly, and yeah, that's and, all you had to do.
And my two most fun parts of the movie is one was kind of a like you say, you know, the hat tip to the old Shazam when he's trying to fly.
Yep.
And you see him with his arms out and the cape. And
this kind of like looks
the,
just like
the,
just put that kid on a box
on
and
a box.
Film it.
And turn on a fan.
Yeah, put your arms out. Or like Ed Wood, shake his tentacles like he's trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that part I liked. And then when they landed the booty trap, the strip club.
Yeah. And you know, obviously if you watch the trailer, it looks like a superhero version of Big. So the fact that Mark Strong is on the keyboard during the mall fight, I'm like, yeah, they know darn well who they are and what they're doing.
Yeah, and the one thing I was wondering throughout the whole film, like I said, folks, if you haven't seen it yet, sorry, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is interesting, but having read enough of the Shazam comic, where is the Captain Marvel family? And then, bam, they all show up.
It's actually a nice moment.
Yeah,
it's actually a kind of cool moment. So, of course, there's going to be a second one because they kind of set that up that way.
Well, actually, I don't think so.
You're not going to do it?
I think they just did just a homage to the original Captain Marvel comic book because a lot of people are wondering what was that thing.
Right, the cookie at the end.
Yeah,
so.
That was an old Captain Marvel villain called the Mind Worm from like the 1930s.
Yeah.
So
will he? Do you think he'll get incorporated? Are they? They're not going to make another Justice League. DC and Warner Brothers are going to try to do an Avengers type thing, will they?
Well, I thought for a while Warner Brothers actually owned DC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're part of the DC. You know, DC was part of the Warner Brothers family. Superman,
right.
Batman, Wonder Woman, and
right, right.
All the movies and stuff. I mean, they might. I mean, here's my problem with DC. Like, you know, guys, you're really making this too complicated. You're making this a lot more work than it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Superman 2 was easy. Villains from Krypton escape. Superman loses powers. Superman gets powers back. Beats them. That's it.
Right.
Like nobody wants to know. People want to in a superhero movie. Nobody wants all that meaning of life, discovery of self, man's inhumanity to man crap. Just want to go watch a movie and leave. It's that simple. Okay. Yes, you can have your touchy feely moments. You know.
But I still blame Dad in Ang Lee's Hulk.
Yeah. Exactly. And I still can't figure out what the hell was going on at the end of that thing. But like he's fighting the clouds.
I'm sorry there's no sad hitchhiking music.
I'm
sorry.
Like, what is this? That's why I say thank God for the Incredible Hulk. And you notice when they start the timeline of the Marvel Universe, they kind of skip over the Hulk and the Punisher and the Fantastic Four. They leave all that out.
Right.
They kind of start with the original Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Which so, I thought was interesting.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, you can check out Abdul at indiepolitics.org. And,
or just do a Google search, Abdul Hakeem Shabazz. You'll find tons of
stuff. Yeah, you'll find stuff, boy. Abdul, we appreciate you hanging out.
Hey, always great to be on Film Sociology.
Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Have a great holiday weekend. Do little if you can. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!